I'm Gab, he's Jules, blue skies over West London. Jules, we have a full show, but first a disclaimer. Doop, doop, doop. No, it's just a coincidence. We both happen to be wearing Philadelphia Union merch. I have this old t-shirt. I used to live in Philly. And of course, your kids chose it because it's lovely.
I picked this just for you.
There you go.
Because I knew you were a Philly boy and for all Philly fans.
The leagues are upon us. The Bundesliga kicking off this weekend. Ligue 1. Kicking off this weekend, and of course, the Premier League kicking off this weekend. Let's get right into it because I don't like season previews that happen
while the
transfer
window
are open. There is a ton of things. We expect Chelsea to make more signings.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about what might happen with Cucurella. Carney's on his way, which is good, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's stupid. Cristiano Ronaldo might not be there.
Yeah.
City, we expect, will make another signing. So things are going to change, but we'll do our best kind of talk about how far along they are right now. Maybe that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
All right, we're not going to run rings around you. We think Liverpool and City are going to finish first and second, right? Or
yeah,
whatever order.
Yeah? Whatever order, they're clearly way above everybody else.
Okay. Liverpool are done, and in those parlance goes, they seem to have gotten their business done early.
Yeah, early. Darwin Nunez, the big signing, of course, that I think took most of the money available for transfer, which meant maybe there was nothing left for a midfielder, for example, and we both believe that they could have done with someone better than what they have, or certainly a different profile, which they haven't. And then you've got...
And then the money they gave Mohamed Salah.
Yeah, and then the new contract to Salah, even with the sale of Sadio Mane. I think that money was reinvested in Darwin Nunez anyway. So a squad that hasn't changed much, but the little changes like Darwin Nunez could be very significant, of course, for the season.
Okay, City obviously made a big signing in a key area. Because I'm talking about Calvin Phillips now. Calvin Phillips will help.
It will help.
What I wonder about, obviously, essentially he comes in for Fernandinho. And yes, I'll get to Haaland in a minute. But also, Calvin Phillips, you expect, should play more minutes than Fernandinho. I'm wondering, are we going to see a City team where maybe we see more of Rodri plus Phillips, Rodri plus Gundogan this season? Maybe, I don't want to say more defensive, but maybe the fullbacks more attack, something like that.
Yeah, I think so. But Phillips can also play a bit higher up on the pitch, I think. I think Pep can make him into a lot of things.
Right. He's not David Silva, basically.
No, he's not David Silva, but he could be more box-to-box, for example, than Rodri is, or even Gundogan to some extent. So I think he can bring that kind of profile to it in transition, certainly. But he can also be more disciplined, and you play with a double pivot, and you would think you're more solid than having Rodri on his own. Rodri, who played a lot last season. This is a crazy season. I can see Rodri being a bit more rotated than he was last year because of the Calvin Phillips signing. So it makes sense.
Haaland is obviously the big talking point. We spoke about him last week. I think it's a long-term thing. I also think with Haaland, you almost have a piece of clay. He was being used in a certain way and was very effective at it at Dortmund under all the different coaches he had when he was there. But I think there's a lot more to his game. Do I think he's going to, you know, interpret the position the way Bernardo Silva does or De Bruyne when they play up front in the false nine, as people like to say? No. But I do think it's not just going to be a case of him leading the line, running behind the defenders, using his combination of strengths and pace.
No, and I mean, that if you play for City, that's not enough anyway. Right. It was interesting to hear what Sergio Aguero was saying about, he still have the habits that he had in Dortmund in the Bundesliga, which, you know, play a little bit for himself, really. I don't think he can do a City. So this is a process that will take a bit of time for him to adapt to the team and the team to adapt to him.
Some might say those were the habits Sergio Aguero had his entire
career.
Game recognizes game. I think the interesting thing is going to be who else makes the top four. Mm-hmm. I think that's where there's going to be some debate. Inevitably, I think we have to focus on the big six. I think the gap between the big six and the rest of the league, despite West Ham spending, has still only increased. So, very simple, who you got at 3 and 4? As of right now, when we reserve the right to change these.
I think Spurs should finish third, really, with Conte, with the signing that they made. They've had a very, very good transfer window so far.
Maybe more to come, even.
Yeah, and probably more to come. But he wanted to be backed up. The club backed him up. I think that was great. That was the right thing to do. They've got depth now for the Champions League as well, plus the World Cup, of course. So for me, Spurs third, and then it's it's a big fight between Chelsea, Arsenal and United for fourth place.
You put them all three on the same level. Yeah. Nobody's even marginally ahead.
No.
Despite Arsenal's enormous spend this summer, despite their strong finish, you're not ready
fourth.
To anoint them.
No, I think they will finish fourth, but I think...
So you see them as slight favourites then?
Yeah, well, yeah, for me, I think they
finish 34, fourth.
33? Yeah, something like that.
Okay, Jules, I'm with you as of right now. And this is the big disclaimer. You don't at me later because I'm telling you, this is temporary. When facts change, opinions change. I'm with you on Spurs to finish third.
Okay.
And I think it's not just the new guys they brought in. I think it's also having a full summer to work under Antonio Conte. You know, some managers are more on the fly game managers. You drop them in, you get effects right away. Others, it really matters the time they get on the training pitch. And look, Liverpool weren't great straight away under Jurgen Klopp. City weren't great straight away under Pep Guardiola. It's with that fourth place that I think there's still the biggest question marks. I know everything's on a high with Arsenal right now. I would still lean Chelsea a little bit, but this is based on the fact that I think they're going to do something.
Yeah.
Based on the situation they're in right now at the minute as we're recording this on August 4th, 2022, maybe Arsenal are slightly, and I do say slightly, ahead. I think for Chelsea, a lot is going to depend on, obviously on the signings, but also on what formation he plays and how he plays it.
Mm.
I don't take it as read that he's moving to a back three. We saw a lot of back four before.
Yeah.
The Sterling through the middle idea, nice idea, if that's the way you go, but still an idea, right?
Yeah. Can you do that the whole season, yeah.
I just think there's a lot of pressure on Tuchel, including the pressure he puts on himself.
Yeah.
Todd Boehly, maybe in the back of his mind, he looks at it and he says, well, it's the first year, you know, learning curve. Maybe even it doesn't really hurt us too much as long as we finish top four.
Yeah.
If we're not super competitive straight away because it's a transition year, we're finding our feet. There's rumors of Michael Edwards coming in.
Yes, I saw that. Which, right? They need a sporting director anyway, you know, as soon as possible.
It's funny. I generally don't know what Michael Edwards is going to. For those who don't know, I've been living under a rock. Michael Edwards is the guy who spent, I think, 10 years at Liverpool.
Yeah.
Is credited as kind of the genius who brought together the analytics and the recruitment and everything, and really was the key to Liverpool's success. Obviously, one of the keys, obviously.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jurgen. Universally admired and so on. When he did write that letter about why he was moving on, there was a line in there, and I am paraphrasing here. He said, "Oh, I spent 10 years. You know, I don't want this to define my life. I see myself 10 years." In a different career. And then I thought, what if he does something completely different next?
Yeah.
I thought that'd be kind of cool. Maybe he's wrestling with that. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
It seems to me, though, that with those links with Chelsea, I kind of think at this stage of the summer, they either get him straight away, or maybe he has a non-compete clause with Liverpool, which stops him from getting a job straight away. But if you don't get him straight away, you're better off staying on the sidelines, watching, and then taking over maybe in the spring with a view towards next season.
Although the January transfer window could also be very important if the first half of the season is not as good as you wanted it to be or expected to be, and maybe you need a sporting director in place, you know, as soon as September, October to already prepare for January. I don't know. I think it's... I don't think Chelsea should be in this position anyway, already, full stop. I know there's been so many changes at the club, which... obviously, it was not planned before. We all know the reasons and we're not going to go back on it. But for Chelsea to be in this position with pretty much Todd Boehly being the owner and also the sporting director, with Thomas Tuchel getting involved, but also preparing the season, all of that is crazy for a club like that. And that's also one of the reasons why Tuchel is worried. What they've only signed, I know Sterling and Koulibaly are two great players, but they still...
And Karnichuk Wormeka,
of course, who has the potential to become a great player, but is still a potential for now. But they're behind where they wanted to be at this stage of the summer anyway. So let's see what happens. But I'm worried for them. I'm also a bit worried for United, to be fair.
I knew this was going to come up.
True. No, but it's true. And that's why I think that right now Chelsea and United don't look maybe in a position as strong as Arsenal, who have had a really good preseason, made their new signings early, that they fit exactly what they wanted for the structure of the team and the profile that they were looking for in terms of age, in terms of qualities, etc., etc. That's why I think that, you know, they're a good shot for finishing fourth.
I think one of the key differences between United season and Chelsea season is that if United finish sixth, but we see the style of playing, if the enthusiasm returns, if some of these young players make the grade, you know, people like Jadon Sancho didn't become terrible players overnight, right? Maybe Ahmad turns into something. You know, if you feel like you're heading in the right direction, then I think you can sell that to United fans and make them feel good about them. But ultimately,
yeah,
you know, football's a big market. Yeah, it's about winning trophies, and that's part of it. Ultimately, it's a big marketing exercise, right? Arsenal fans feel great about themselves because of the way they finished the season, and, you know, Tierney and this and Gabriel Jesus. But that is a skill, too. Chelsea finished considerably higher, but they're now in this situation where you can't sell them on saying, oh, we're rebuilding. Look at all our kids, because, you know, ultimately, it's Koulibaly, it's Jorginho, it's Conte, it's people who are not kids, it's Thiago Silva. So, obviously, you have younger players as well. But so I think in some ways that further makes things difficult. Sterling's not a kid either anymore.
No, no.
Sterling's been young for a long time. So I think that really ratchets up the pressure. So I think that's why it's a big season for Tuchel. But for United, even if they don't finish top four, you can sell this season as a W. If you hit certain targets, you don't think so.
But what are the targets then? If you don't finish top, if you finish sixth, what's the target that you would have hit?
I think the target that you hit is if you play better football, you look like you're going in the right direction, you go on a cup run, you play the kids, you get that vibe back. I think it's easy to it's easy to forget how toxic the environment around United, you know, really has been.
Yeah, no, that's true. I don't think it's going to be an easy season for Ten Hag, and I think already we see with the Cristiano incident, and we'll talk about it a bit more after, that there's a lot of things to still sort out, and there's still a lot of issues there. I just think you also need to see a progression in terms of league finish and where you end up the season, whether you get fourth place, because they're not going to get above.
Did they finish second under Solskjaer?
They finished second in the Solskjaer,
You know, and and then 6 months later, he's sacked. So I think it's more about that. You know, I often talk about why I think performance is often more important than results.
No.
Taking a look at the others, I think on paper, West Ham and Villa, maybe a notch above everybody else.
Yeah.
We've spoken of Scamacca, of Aguerd, Kostic maybe coming in. I think some people would say, is David Moyes the right guy here, or were we too hard on David Moyes before?
I don't think we were too hard on him before.
I wasn't. I like the guy, but
No. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan, and I didn't like the style of football. I've said that many times. But with the players that he has now, maybe the football will have to be better. Maybe you can't be as minimalist, and I'm not saying that in a bad way for West Ham fans, as he was in the last three seasons, or two seasons especially. That gave them results, but then there's another way of playing football with those players that would be much better, and that can bring you also results. So we will have to see. They also missed out on potentially someone like Onana or Danjuma, who they were really keen on, ready to put a lot of money on, and missed them out for whatever reasons. But I think I like what they did. I like what they did. I like what Villa and Gerrard doing. I looked last season, if you only count the points from where Gerrard arrived in November to the end of the season, they finished ninth, not 14th like they actually did over the whole season. If they can improve on ninth, I think it would be great. If Gerrard can keep that form over the whole 38 matches of the season, and the signing that they made, you know, Diego Carlos, Camara, that's good. I expect one or two more, and keeping the players that they've already had before, apart from Carney, of course. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of times at that level, it's about keeping the players. And that's why, I mean, arguably, assuming they're still there on September 1st, I think they will be, Gerard Bowen and Declan Rice could be West Ham's biggest signings of the summer.
That would be, you're right.
No
sure.
disrespect to Scamacca and Aguerd. Further down, and like I didn't want to get messages of people, oh, why don't you talk about Brighton? Why don't you talk about so-and-so? Like, I don't want to give people short shrift. I do want to mention two other clubs that I think are ambitious and want to be hoping to break into that. Two clubs who maybe there's very different vibes about them. Mm. One is Newcastle.
Yeah.
How do you rate their summer? This idea that they're going to come in and it's going to be Manchester City Mark II. We kind of said it all along. These guys are trying to run a business.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a lot of cash, but they're not going to run at a loss because they know that there are rules out there. And I think also it's a slightly different. I don't think this is, people have used the term sports washing. I don't think this is to make the world feel great about Saudi Arabia that they made this investment in Newcastle. I think they made this investment because they think Newcastle has a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
This is a different situation from Manchester City.
Yeah, I think it's different. Dan Ashworth, who they picked, and they had to wait for a long time for him to finally be able to start working for them as a sporting director. We said it many times, he's a very intelligent arrival and recruit. And that's what they do. I think they wanted to do more business than they have so far, for sure. But there's Sven Botman, your favorite.
There you go.
Was great. They missed out on Ekitike, they missed out on a few others that they were going for. Again, I don't think they're done, I don't think they're finished. Because right now, this is a good squad, and it's a squad that Eddie Howe did really well in the second half of last season. But it's not a, like a dream squad either. It's not a squad that you think, okay, you can compete now with the top six. You're still way, way behind.
Leicester's the other squad, the other team which are very much in the news. Viewed from the outside, it looks to me like after several seasons in which the ownership spent a ton of money, and I think they spent a lot of money well, and I think the team did well. I think they kind of, last season there was a point where they sort of went off the boil, and you can ask why and wonder why. Why injuries obviously played a big part in it. Brendan Rodgers, I think he tried different things. Some of it didn't quite work out. It does feel like this is a season where they're saying, all right, let's rein in the spending a little bit. Obviously, Kasper Schmeichel gone. We'll be talking about that. Madison has been linked left, right, and center. I'm assuming he's probably going to stay at this stage, but who knows? Fofana, another big question mark. They haven't gone out and spent money.
The only club to have not signed anyone yet.
Is the thinking that the ownership said, all right, we went for it. Now we've signed these young players, let's focus on developing them rather than continually adding to the squad.
Yeah, maybe.
And maybe that's also reflected in someone like Yuri Tielemans, who, you know, I'm a huge fan of. He has a year left on his contract. He was linked to other clubs. Now it looks like he may stay, he may not stay. I don't know.
Does it feel to you that it's a bit the end of a cycle, though? He's got this feeling, not just yet, but that Vardy is 35 and at some point it will go. Tielemans could go on a free in a year. Schmeichel is gone. Fofana clearly is pushing for a move away. Madison can probably leave as well too, as we mentioned. And then you're left with having to rebuild and start a new cycle around Daka and Barnes and James Justin, players like that, maybe. And it certainly feels a bit like, it feels a bit like that. I'm a bit worried about them compared to where they were the last three seasons, for example.
Potentially, but I will say this. When I think sometimes Brendan Rodgers works at his best when his resources are more limited. And when, you know, you sit down and you work with what you have, there's a lot of talent in
that
side.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Maybe even this team is more talented than Leicester and Newcastle, potentially. Even with the guys they've lost or might yet lose. So I'll be curious to see how they do. I think it's a big, big year for Brendan as well.
We
need to mention Everton simply because of the historic size of the club and where they're going and the issues with Usmanov, who doesn't actually own the club, by the way.
Yeah, let's remind everyone.
Yeah, let's remind everybody. He's not the club owner. What success for Everton this season? Mid-table?
Yeah, mid-table. I don't know. I can't really work them out. I still can't work Lampard out in that team. I don't know if he's the right fit for them. I don't understand what they do in terms of recruitment, or maybe they're trying to get a replacement for Richarlison, who is not Dwight McNeil, by the way. It felt like, you know, they spent the money from Richarlison on McNeil. I don't know where the goals from Richarlison are going to come. Calvert-Lewin is already injured. They're going to go for Onana, which they will get, who is an amazing prospect, really, really super talented kid, really good kid.
But is he the best Onana in the world, or would you go with a goalkeeper Onana?
I prefer this Onana than the goalkeeper
one. The goalkeeper Onana is a lot cooler than
this. He's a lot cooler, but this
one. Okay, I've never seen this guy speak, so I don't know. I can't judge or dress. I don't know. But the other Onana is legit
one of the. He's cool.
He's one of the top 25 coolest players in the world.
True, but this Onana is a bit different.
Sorry about our Onanism here.
Younger, but you can get there. He's got enough swag to be super cool very soon.
All right.
But they've paid for the talent, but he's still an unproven talent. I think he could have done with another year in Ligue 1 easily. So we will have to see, but yeah.
All right, regular viewers will know, I do not follow the championship. I can read the names. I know what's happened. I know who Forest have signed and Bournemouth and Fulham. I get the feeling it's not going to be 3 up, 3 down. Do you?
It could be. I mean, what I liked about Forest is that the owner said, we will back the manager, we will back Steve Cooper, we will spend a lot because we know that if we don't, we're going to go down straight away.
Well, it's also because he has a lot of money and likes to wheel and
deal. Yeah, but he didn't really spend that before either. You know, so they were still a surprise promoted side,
right,
who went from bottom after hiring Steve Cooper to being promoted. And they spent a lot of money on some interesting signings. Certainly. Will they all work out? I don't know. I hope for them. But, you know, Nico Williams is a good signing. The moves from Germany in the Bundesliga, you could see why they were attracted to those kind of guys too. I think it's interesting. Right. Forest, more than Bournemouth. I fear for Bournemouth and our friend Richard Hughes and Scott Parker, and even for Fulham and Marco Silva, to be fair.
All right. I'm not going to make any predictions on the promoted sides. I want to see them, and I want the transfer window.
Fair enough.
To close. Honestly, this is stupid. All these predictions you got there, they're silly. Just take them for what they're worth. And if you're going to judge people on predictions, let's do this when the transfer window closes. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough Premier League in honor of the Bundesliga. We're going to take a look at the top teams for a lot more in this. Obviously, our friends Derek Ray and Archie Rintutt, a.k.a. ART, they've got you covered all season long. But inevitably, the question is always, you know, who can knock off Bayern after they won their 29th title in a row? It's not actually that, but it feels it.
No, it's not.
Let's start with Bayern. I don't want to spend too much time on it because we're going to talk about Bayern every week.
Yeah.
But obviously the big takeaway, Lewandowski gone, Mane in, up front. And then obviously at the back, a big move for Matthijs de Ligt.
Yeah.
Gravenberch in midfield, Mazraoui. This is a revolution.
This is impressive.
A couple of years ago, I remember I said, like, this team's going to need major surgery in a couple of years simply because of the way they were constructed.
Mm.
Now I think they've addressed a lot of that. Now it's a question of, do these pieces fit and how do they fit?
I think Nagelsmann will have to make them fit. It's as simple as that. For me, the pressure is all on him now. First season is always, okay, you won the league, there were some highs and lows, you lost some games, defensively you look shaky, you try this crazy back three with all those forwards, you know, even playing at wing backs, blah, blah, blah. That was great. It was fun to watch. At times, if you were Bayern or certainly the Bayern hierarchy, you're thinking like, well, what is he doing? Now this is serious. It's his second season. And he will have to get it right, especially after all the money they've invested. I mean, all the money. Mazraoui is on a free. Gravenberch is a bargain. Okay, De Ligt is expensive to a certain point. And then Mane, I don't think was too much anyway. But still, with he got the players he wanted in the position that he wanted. Now the pressure is on him, and he has to deliver.
I think Bayern are going to win the league. But there is pressure on Nagelsmann. But I also think this is a season where, if they're not as impressive, this is a season where you can kind of get away with. I'm sorry, I disagree with you a little bit on the pressure. You can get away as long as you need to show growth this year. And if you take a step back in terms of results, I think you still kind of need to win the league. But it's not like if he finishes second, they go on a run in Europe, and most of all, they play good football, and they play football the way he wants it to do, and his ideas work. He's coming back next year. There's no question in my mind. He signed such a long-term contract. They've invested so much money in him.
Of course.
You're not in a position now where you can judge Nagelsmann just by results. Oh, yeah, win the Bundesliga at a minimum. I mean, some people will think that.
But I didn't mean just result. I mean, you know, they will have to play well and better than last season. But finishing second is a failure. And he might stay.
It is a failure, but he's going to stay.
Huge failure. Like losing to Villarreal in the Champions League. This is not good. And if that happens again, if they knocked out in the last 16 of the Champions League this season, you'll be like, hang on a minute, how is that even possible? And you know, it was, I think a lot of the Champions League elimination was on him. I think a lot of the things that we saw in the Bundesliga that were not very good was on him as well. The things that he tried, the fact that he couldn't really transmit the message of what he wanted to the players for some of it. That can't happen again.
All right, let's talk Borussia Dortmund. I think, I'm going on a limb and say, I think they're going to be better this year than they were last year, despite losing Erling Haaland and despite, obviously, the very sad news of his replacement, Sebastian Haller, simply because I assume people are going to stay fit. I assume Edin Terzic is going to move the needle. And obviously, defensively, they've added bodies. I love Niklas Süle, but is he Beckenbauer? No, I think...
Definitely not.
Terzic still needs to find that tactical balance. But I think simply having those guys fit, I think we'll make a difference. You're on board with that, right?
Yeah, I'm on board with that. The question then is,
if you're on board with that, is Leipzig or Dortmund to finish second?
So I'll go for Leipzig to finish second.
Tedesco.
Tedesco keeping Nkunku was huge, of course, plus the signing that they've made too. I think is interesting if Vardjol stays. I think they will be better than Dortmund. I still think that Dortmund have issues. And if Bellingham is not at his best, and if defensively they're still as shocking as last season, plus if Adeyemi or whoever plays Malen or whoever else they signed to replace Haller, or, you know, while Haller is recovering, if they don't hit the ground running straight away and the goals are not coming as they would like to, then they can be in a difficult position.
Do we see a gap between them and Leverkusen, for example, or Eintracht, maybe? Is there another surprise package that, or is it pretty much assured that they're second and third, whatever order you're picking?
I don't see, apart from Bayer Leverkusen, maybe keeping the improvement under our friend Rico
Suave.
But I still think that top three should remain top three like that.
All right, stay tuned. Bundesliga, obviously, ESPN Plus this year, if you're in the US, promises to be quite a race. All right, enough previews. Here's what you've been waiting for. Here's some quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
Liga 1 kicks off this weekend. Woo-hoo! No surprise who the overwhelming favorite is. Jules, walk me through the runners and riders.
Yes, I mean, PSG, of course, heavily favorite. They should win it. But I think, again, it's not just a bit like Nagelsmann we were talking earlier. It's to see how they do it, how Galtier does, how they play. They would have to play better football than under Pochettino, which... some would say it's not hard, but still. See Messi, Mbappe, Neymar together. The new signings as well. Be interesting to see that.
Stop talking about PSG. I want to know about the other ones.
Yeah. But then Lyon have been impressive in their signings with Tolisso, with Lacazette coming back to the club, with Tagliafico as well. This is good. Marseille with Tudor, who's already under pressure. We will talk about that in a bit. But we'll be up there. Monaco as well. Let's hope they can qualify for the Champions League too. Lens are great. I think this is going to be a very, very exciting Ligue 1 season for sure. I'm really looking forward to it. You can never have enough Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, Gab. So the messaging from United seems to have changed over the Rayo Vallecano incident.
Like, we work in media, right? So Cristiano Ronaldo is spotted leaving at halftime with other players. So they ask the club, did he have permission to leave? The club says, no comment. We're not commenting on that. Mm. Okay, fine, which is technically code for
yeah.
if you had permission, you know, you as a club know that you would tell us
yeah.
because you know what, if he could, because that's how you kill the story, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then 24 hours later, after everybody's outraged that he's left, the club sources let it be known, I think it was on Sky Sports and others, right? On background, oh no. He had permission to leave. There's no issue, everything's fine, right? Okay, fine. That's the line you want to take? Fine. Fast forward another 24 hours, Erik ten Hag. It's like, this is unacceptable. That's it wasn't crazy. Just Cristiano.
What a mess.
You got to get your story straight here, bud.
I know.
One way or the other. Not a good look. Not a good look.
Not at all.
We thought Marco Correa was on his way to City. Then it looked like Chelsea. Then Brighton shocked us with a statement. Jules, Brighton didn't say this is never happening.
No.
This is going to get done, right?
Yeah. They said there's no agreement yet when I think maybe... a few reports were saying like, oh, it's all good, it's all agreed. When I think
52 and a half, Levi Colwell,
yeah,
the other way.
Yeah. But I think the structure of the deal on what do you pay when and how, all of that was still to sort out. And I think Brighton just wanted to just put it out there. Like, listen, okay, you can all say it's agreed, it's not agreed yet. But like you said, right. They never said it was off the table. I think it will happen. Cucurella wants it to happen, Chelsea as well. The money is great for Brighton, as we mentioned before.
They already like a lot of money for Cucurella.
Yeah, and they're already thinking about how to replace him with who and reinvesting that money. So, but yeah, things like that happen a lot in transfers. We've seen it before. Barcelona sold off another chunk of the club, or as they like to say, activated another economic lever. I think that's the third lever. When they sold 24.5% of Barca Studios, would it be enough for them to register their players, though?
So this is kind of TBD. So COPE reporting that...
So they sold for 100 million euros, right?
Yeah, so they sold... So Barca Studios, for those who don't know, is basically their in-house production company. Yeah. They run club TV channels. They make little club videos and so on. They sold 24.5% of it for 100 million euros. They didn't sell it to a TV company or a media company. They sold it to Socios.com. They're the people who make those fan tokens.
Yeah.
Which already, I think, raises some... questions.
Definitely.
But whatever. Well done to them for getting 100 million in. If they get 100 million in. I just want to be clear on this. COPE in Spain reporting that La Liga's valuation of where they are is different from Barcelona's, La Liga's auditors. And obviously,
yeah.
It's La Liga who get to decide. They're about 150 million euros short. That is a big gap, but that would mean they can't really register anybody.
Mm.
However, this was before that third lever was activated. So before you count that 100 million. So if you count that 100 million, then they're 50 million short. Then you could imagine De Jong, maybe Memphis Depay, maybe Aubameyang, who's been linked to Chelsea. Maybe players take pay cuts, restructure. Then they get a lot closer. Certainly the impression is for Barcelona, it was disappointing because they said even without this, we thought we were much further along than La Liga says we are. So stay tuned for more dispute.
You've always said that those levers are a very short-term solution, right? That you almost gamble a bit on the future of the club in a few years' time.
And certainly as far as the TV is concerned, I mean, it can be smart, it can be not so smart. If it was automatically super smart, then every club would do it. It's not just Barcelona who control TV rights. Obviously, they say it's necessary. For me, it is a big gamble, but you know, there's nothing wrong with taking risks. It's how you assess the reward. It's how you assess the risk-reward component.
Yeah.
Jules, we're going to see a semi-automated offside next week in the UEFA Super Cup and, of course, later at the World Cup. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this. So the ball, to explain to people, will have a little chip inside, which will obviously help for the offside with all the cameras and everything. I'm glad we're trialing it. I think we should be trying. We should see how it goes.
It's not a trial. It's going to happen at the World Cup.
But like, you know, before they make it for everything all the time. That's what I meant by that. I think it's really good. I'm all for it. Absolutely. Players won't be taking a knee before kickoff in the Premier League this season for every single game, Gab. The players, the captains have put a statement out saying that they will do sporadically through the season. But they will show their opposition to racism as well in other ways. What do you make of all of this? We knew that was going to happen. Are you surprised it happens now?
I know. I mean, you know my thoughts on this. I don't think it should have ever been something where it's league-wide. I think it should have been left to individual choice because it's more meaningful, right, if you do it that way. I hope that players who feel that this is the right way to manifest will still feel free to do it because I think it's important. You know, in terms of the other things they do, the messaging matters. Obviously, policy matters just as much. And, you know, I think we still have a ways to go when it comes to that.
Yeah.
A survey of online abuse of footballers revealed that Cristiano Ronaldo and Harry Maguire are the two most targeted. Are you surprised, Jules?
I'm not surprised. Maybe for different reasons. I think Cristiano, you don't think would be abused by his own fans, but by the rest of other fans. For Maguire, it's probably more his own fans than anybody else. It's just sad anyway. No one should ever be abused online, whether you're footballer or not footballer. So I hope
we criticism can do is one thing, that. Abuse is another thing.
Exactly. Napoli president Aurelio De Laurentiis had some controversial things to say about African players and African Cup of Nations, Gab.
Yeah, so obviously he had Anguissa and Osimhen and Koulibaly on his team last year. And he said, you know, I love African players and what they bring. But it really bugs me that they go off to the Cup of Nations and they go to the World Cup and they play qualifiers and this like that. And, you know, we're the idiots who still pay them. Well, you know what? Like, either make it a policy, say I'm not going to sign international players or I'll only sign African players if they promise not to go. Mm. Otherwise, shut up. You know they're internationals. You know they want to play for their country. Honestly, like, it's such a silly thing to say from a very erratic personality. Meanwhile, Chelsea unveiled Kalidou Koulibaly, one of those African players, and he replied to his former president and also placed a call to John Terry.
Yeah, he did. He said that, obviously, De Laurentiis was very disrespectful the way he was talking about Africa and African players and countries and the competition as well.
Would he have complained about Diego Maradona wanting to play in qualify for Argentina?
Yeah, no. Exactly. He called John Terry to ask him for his number 26 that he was wearing at Napoli, that obviously Terry wore at Chelsea. And Terry said, yeah, of course, you can have it. The Premier League will make conversations between referees and VAR public after games this season. Gad, this is something that you've always wanted to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's all about transparency. It's all about how we interpret this. I'm sick and tired of having Joe, ex-pro, has no idea how a VAR works or refereeing works, going and saying something stupid. Yeah, I mean, not saying opinions, but just procedurally. Hopefully this will make it clear. Hopefully this will make it more transparent. And hopefully this will help us understand who the best referees are. Paul Pogba has made his decision for Juventus regarding his surgery. Jules, is this a gamble?
I mean, I find this story fascinating because it's very much kind of club v country situation, in the sense that Juve wanted him to get surgery, which would have ruled him out until 2023, but at least would have cleaned his meniscus, would have cleaned the knee. You would have known that the surgery, well, I mean, there's always risk that it doesn't work, but usually this works, and that he would be fit again for the start of the new year. But that would mean missing the World Cup. And Paul didn't want to miss the World Cup. He wanted to try to be there. So instead, he's chosen the other way to get rehabilitation, which is without the surgery, which means he will be out for 5 weeks, have a different treatment, and then he hopes will be fit and that the knee will be much better and he'll be able to play, go to the World Cup, and etc., etc. If you're Juve, you can't be happy with that.
I get they can't be happy, but I think if they know Paul Pogba, and they know Paul Pogba has been there before, obviously the World Cup is absolutely huge.
No, it is.
I don't know if he's going to get to play in another one. I mean, possibly, potentially, could
surely
be touch
not.
And go.
Yeah.
So I think you have to understand that, and you have to respect that. And I think it's Pogba's body. It's Pogba's right to go and decide this. Bearing in mind that he's also running a big risk because he could lose both. He could, you know, forget the 5 weeks, come back, get hurt again, miss the World Cup,
setback. Yeah, for sure.
Have another setback where then he misses part of next season too. You know, so I feel for him that he's in this situation.
Yeah, it is. It's no idea at all. Borja Mayoral has left Real Madrid and will be joining Getafe. Gab, does that mean that Real are a bit short in terms of cover up front behind Kareem the Dream? That's the first of the season.
And Mariano Diaz.
Yeah, but no.
Okay. Yeah, I think they're short. This is why I'm leaving that little teeny tiny door open for Cristiano Ronaldo to return
no
to the
way.
No, I know. Well, we'll see. We'll see. You know, inshallah, who knows? It does strike me as a bit odd because Borja Mayoral is, dare I say it, a better footballer than Mariano Diaz.
100%.
And I think Karim Benzema is older and he has a World Cup and he's going to be tired after the World Cup and the season's compressed. I'm guessing Asensio's on a contract here as well, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of selling Asensio maybe to make room for. I don't know.
I think he wants to stay. But,
I mean, they're talking, oh, yeah, we'll play Rodrigo through the middle. Okay, fine. Play Rodrigo through the middle. Give it a shot. You know, not a bad player, but I don't know.
Because Luka Jovic, obviously,
Luka Jovic, obviously gone, yeah. It still feels like you're a little short, and you don't want to tire Benzema out.
No, that's for sure.
You know. Kasper Schmeichel has joined Aaron Ramsey at Nice. Jules, this was kind of unexpected, no? Kasper Schmeichel, 11 season, legendary captain,
Yeah. This one came a bit out of the blue. They wanted Yann Sommer. Lucien Favre wanted Sommer at Nice. They wanted an experienced goalkeeper. They lost Walter Benitez, who left on a free for PSV Eindhoven. Sommer didn't happen. So Ian Moody, remember Ian Moody?
Yes.
Who is now Nice sporting director.
You're kidding?
No.
Is he really?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
So this is the fellow who was at Cardiff.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And before that he was a press officer in, right?
Crystal Palace, I think he was as well, yeah.
I believe his wife is Italian.
Is she now?
Yeah.
Good. And so I think his contact and his knowledge is more on English football. They wanted an experienced goalkeeper and an experienced attacking midfielder.
Cardiff connection explaining Ramsey, perhaps, as well.
Maybe. So I think these are easy deals to make. Ramsey, obviously, doesn't cost you anything. There's no transfer fee. It's very minimal for Kasper Schmeichel. And
not good for Leicester, though.
Yeah, it's not good for Leicester. You would think that Leicester let him go because they have someone that they're going to sign now, the goalkeeper, not that they're going to keep Iversen and Wards as their number one and two. I would be surprised if that was the case. But yeah, it's interesting. It's a very young squad, so they need that kind of experience with it. Let's see if it works. I'm a bit more skeptical about Ramsey, as much as I love him, than Schmeichel, because Ramsey hasn't played football for a while now, apart from with Wales.
Well, maybe he'll get to play the World Cup.
Yeah, he wants to get fit for that. Alex Telles has joined Sevilla on loan from Manchester United. Gab, will he help Sevilla more than the last guy they loaned from United, Sir Anthony Martial?
Or Tony Marshall, as he's known. Yeah, like, there's no link between the two, right? But other than the fact that they're both on loan from Manchester United. I think he'll help. I think he'll help down the left-hand side. Obviously, Augustinsson is gone as well. And I think Alex Telles is a very solid, steady performer, which I think is what Julian Lopetegui wants. Maybe we didn't see the best of him at Manchester United, but I think when he played, he generally didn't play badly. You know, it's just that you have another left back there named Luke Shaw, who plays for England and so on, and who also has his ups and downs, by the way.
Yeah.
And obviously with the signing of Malacia, you don't need to carry three left backs.
So Telles goes from the bench at United to the bench at Sevilla, right?
I think you'll see fair. I mean, Sevilla are in a bunch of competitions. Their squad isn't that big. I mean, last year they were hit by injuries, and you saw what happened, right? They were short. Dean Henderson joined Nottingham Forest on loan this season, and he gave an interview to TalkSport
where
he used some pretty hefty language. He said that, you know, there were broken promises from Manchester United.
Yeah.
He basically, last season they wouldn't let him go out on loan, but then they said, oh, don't worry, you'll compete with De Gea for the starting job.
Yes, he said that. They said he would be the number one.
Obviously, I don't know who he was talking to, whether it was Solskjaer. I'd love it if people came out and said, oh, yeah,
yes,
Ole told me this, and then Ralph said that. I mean, I'd love it if people, but of course, we don't know. It's just United. And he says his wasted season was criminal. I think it is pretty criminal that at that
criminal
age,
is a strong word.
You waste
a
season. But he's not saying they're criminals. He's saying it's sad that you had to spend a season that was wasted when, you know, you had your cap for England, you looked like to be really good.
Yeah, but we said at the time that it was a bit strange that they kept him when he could have gone out on loan, because clearly he's too good to be a number two, certainly from what we saw when he played, not that he played much for them, but too good to be a number two and to not play at all.
So, you know what's funny is, if United were Bayern Munich and John Murtaugh were Brazo Saliamidzic, and Richard Arnold were Herbert Heiner, they would come out today in front of the cameras and say, actually, Dean, you're wrong. You didn't break any promises and this and that. United aren't going to do that. Different country, different culture. Bayern, I think, ramp it up to an extreme with the blunt talk. It is interesting. All he's done so far is just gotten a whole load of abuse from United fans. And by the way, he could be coming back.
Well, it will be. I mean, this is just on loan at Forest, although I think there's an option to buy at the end of it. Let's see how he does. Now he kind of put a lot of pressure on himself now with those comments, because everybody's going to watch him tomorrow. And if he's bad, for example, well, this weekend, if he's bad with Forest or through the start of the season, people say, well, did you really think you could be number one at United?
Well, that's what
like
they
this?
Told him.
That's what they told him, or certainly that's what
supposedly.
He said. If Cristiano Ronaldo moves, and even if he doesn't, Gab, to be fair, United are a bit short in the centre-forward department with Anthony Martial, the only really recognised striker. Gab, is that why they're linked with Stuttgart, Zaza, Kalazic, and Salzburg, Benjamin Sesko?
I would assume so. I think, all right, part of it is also Sesko's agent's been very, very busy. Sometimes, and again, giving away media secrets, when you see people who are linked with just about every club and in the news all the time, like Nuno Gomes many, many years ago, it's because they have an agent who just talks to everybody continuously, right? Yeah. Sesko played for Salzburg, did well, you know, not Adeyemi or Holland well, but, you know, he's tall and athletic. Kalazic is 25, he's a little bit older. They need a center forward regardless whether Ronaldo stays or goes, I think. You can't play the season. I know you can talk, oh, fluid front three, blah, 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 and like, oh, look, I did it with Tadic. Yeah, you did it with Tadic before. But when you got enough credit where you could go and actually buy somebody, what did you do? Yeah. You got Sebastian Haller, right? Who, you know, is much closer to Kalazic and Sesko than these guys. So Sesko's young, I think more one for the future. Kalazic more sort of a functional option. He's by no means old. I don't think Kalazic necessarily, I don't think either one are like Cavani type level players.
But Sesko has more potential, I think, than Kalazic.
Sesko has a ceiling. Yeah. He's got a much higher ceiling. So, it makes sense. Makes sense, too, that they're totally divorcing this from the Ronaldo decision, because I think they're two very, very different issues. Karni Chukwuemeka is a Chelsea player.
Hey.
Jules, where does he fit in Thomas Tuchel's galaxy of attacking options?
That's a good
Does he hang out with Callum Hudson-Odoi and Hakim Ziyech and Christian Pulisic?
Or even if he plays a bit deeper with Loftus-Cheek and Ross Barkley maybe as well, because I think he can play as a more of a box-to-box midfielder and play a bit deeper than just behind the forwards or the striker. I think you buy a player who's obviously very, very talented, still only 18 years old or 19 years old, one for the future who led England.
They're exploiting a contractual situation to do this.
Exactly. Yeah. He had only 1 year left on his contract. It cost you 20 million with bonuses. It's not too much. And he's potentially going to be an amazing player. So you go for him. You know that with Jorginho getting older, Kante being fit halfway through half of the season, you maybe need someone in that department anyway, so why not? I think it was more of an opportunity buy than something that they'd planned before due to the contract situation. But yeah, I like it a lot. If they can develop him, I like it a lot.
I think they need to give him minutes. That's the whole thing with developing,
right?
Well,
yeah, of course. I think he played 15 games in the Premier League last season.
Yeah, so maybe one option, and that's 15 games for Villa. I know he's a year older
Villa,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's one of those situations where he comes, if he's going to be part of the general rotation and get minutes, great. If not, logical thing, I think, is to send him on loan.
Mm. Dries Mertens has said goodbye to Napoli, Gab, in the most emotional way.
This is such a fantastic
story. They love each
story.
Other so much.
This guy was like kind of a throwaway winger at PSV Eindhoven. I mean, not a bad player, but, moves to Napoli, becomes sort of this goal-scoring sensation. They call him Ciro, I think, which is a typical Neapolitan name. I think he might have called his son Ciro or something when he was born. Just had such a fantastic relationship with the fans and the club. Contract expires, cutbacks, he ain't getting a new one. At some point, a couple of days ago, it was just like, ooh, could Juve swoop for him on a free? And he's kind of like says, I ain't going to use it. If I have to leave Naples, I'm going to go abroad. He said he's definitely going to come back to live there afterwards. It's just a great story.
It's amazing.
It's an example of how you can leave the club. And by the way, he's been a class act throughout.
Yeah.
I wish I could say the same of some of the people at his former employers. Liga hasn't even started yet.
And
my main man, Igor Tudor, is off to a rocky start.
He's been a massive.
Jorge Sampaoli has some big shoes to fill, which you wouldn't have thought of, because I would have thought Tudor has much bigger shoes than
you
Sampaoli
think so.
In literal terms.
That's why maybe he struggles to fit in the shoes left by Sampaoli, because he's
a little tight on him. Sampaoli has those little pixie feet, right? He's got
yeah,
those, like,
yeah,
little,
yeah.
Like, yeah, size 32.
Players think that Tudor shouts too much and he's too angry all the time. Literally all the time.
And these are players who were Sampaoli before, by the way.
Yeah, but it seems that certainly they believe that Sampaoli was more chilled at times than Tudor, who has spent his time shouting since he arrived a month ago, no, less than a month ago now. But to the point that they even said to the president, Pablo Longoria, this is not working. We need to do something. So they had a meeting, like a big meeting, to try to sort out some of the differences that they have, the thing that they're not happy with, Payet, and some of the key players. I don't know where this is going. They've been terrible at pre-season. They were battered by Norwich. They lost to Nottingham Forest, I think, as well, or another English club. It was bad.
Tudor's a badass. He's Croatian. He looks like a freaking Marvel superhero.
Yeah, yeah, he does like
I would have thought he's intelligent enough to know that with somebody like Dimitri Payet, you don't shout at him. Like, you know, it's easier to get something with a little spoonful of honey than with vinegar with
Payet. Or Nutella, some would say.
Nutella, yes. Yeah.
Inter thought they had agreed a deal to rescind Alexis Sanchez's contract, Gab, and finish it. Maybe not.
It was funny. Everybody reported, like, oh, yeah, they reached the deal. They'll give him, I think it was 5 million euros to go away and never come back. And then video emerges of him last night, and he's walking along in Milan, and like they're saying, like, oh, so now you're leaving. He's like, nope, you reached the deal to rescind your contract. Nope, no. Not yet. No, so what are you going to do? He's like, oh, I want to win. I want to win with Inter. You know, like, God. I think in the end, they're going to find a solution. But, you know, he has a contract, and it's his right to go and then get as much money as he can for it to go away. This is, in the real world, this is what happens if you overpay for a player. And we've seen more than one club overpay in wages for Alexis Sanchez.
When you think about his career, the last, 4 years, 3 years between United and... It's crazy,
imagine,
isn't it?
Maybe he can come back to Arsenal. That's the last time he played really well, right?
Yeah, it is the last time he played really well, yeah.
Renato Sanchez has joined Paris Saint-Germain from Lille. Is this a smart move, Jules? Or just Gaultier recalling his little buddy?
He had 1 year left on his contract. It cost you 15 million euros. He's 24. Okay, fitness-wise, the injury list is a bit of a worry. But I think if you can keep him fit, it's a no-brainer. He's a great player, talented, versatile. He knows Gaultier, he knows Campos, he knows Ligue 1. And
it just always seems like the Campos sphere.
Yeah, of course. No, but there's a bit of that behind the scenes. You know, I think Campos is very close to Renato.
Does it mean
agents.
That Leandro Paredes is now available for a move, or are they going to keep
I think Leandro Paredes and Juventus are very good friends right now. And
yeah,
I think Juventus...
Pay attention, Juve fan.
Juventus trying to be very good friends with PSG to bring Paredes to Turin. I think one of them we said. So they're starting the process of getting rid of players as well. And I think on top of Renato, maybe one or two could still come. So it's been an interesting summer, to put it that way. David Rohm joined Leipzig from Hoffenheim, Gab, and he says that he's the most important summer signing in the Bundesliga, like talking himself. I bet you love that confidence.
Hey, listen, I am a disciple of Kid Rock on this one, right? it ain't bragging when you say it, then you back it up. And look, he's a very exciting player. German international, people wanted him. He's definitely a player on the rise. I love this attitude. I think he's a big part of the reason why I think we both see Leipzig as the main contenders to challenge Bayern this season, even with the Tedesco up and downs. I love it. Fly the flag.
Good,
fight the power. There's nothing wrong with that.
As long as you deliver, we agree, right?
As long as you back it up.
Yeah.
Cesc Fabregas has signed for Como in Italy's Serie B, and he won't just be a player. He'll be a shareholder, too. And according to reports, so will his former teammate, Thierry Henry. What's happening here?
Maybe do they share the same agent? Oh, yeah, they do. Is he an agent maybe that knows people like Como? Oh, yeah, he does.
Right. Is it an agent who has a famous dad who used to run Arsenal?
Exactly. And Darren Dean, to say
his
name.
At this point, let's name check him.
Yeah, let's name him.
Hi, Darren.
Dean. Hi, Darren. I know you're watching and listening. Took Cesc Fabregas, who, by the way, do you know the last time he played football? He played actually a game?
Like a year ago?
It was in September, from Monaco. He's been injured all season. He's 35. This is a bit of a... It is a gamble, let's be honest here. Of course it is. I don't know if he can recover his form. We like him a lot. He's a friend of ours. So I hope it works out for him. I hope he does well. And he always wanted to, in his post-career, yeah, be part of a project where maybe he owns a club, where he can become a coach, a manager. All of that is very interesting to him. So this is part of the
Como project is an interesting one. I think they were selling, I don't know if it's NFTs or something, but you can get a season ticket for life at Como or something. Yeah, Lake Como, beautiful part of the world. George Clooney has a house there.
Of course.
You know, max respect to Cesc Fabregas. But I will say this, he's one of those players who, if you look at where he's lived, he's done pretty well.
That's
right?
True.
Barcelona, Tottridge, which is the little fancy
London,
bit, right? Hampstead, wherever he lived. Then West London, Monaco, Barcelona again, and now the shores of Lake Como.
I know, pretty cool, isn't it?
Exactly.
Beware the perils of crypto. The collapse of Voyager, a major sponsor of the NWSL, means that some players will be out of pocket again.
Yeah, so there's different reportings on this, but basically Voyager, I guess, it's a crypto platform where you can buy and sell. They collapsed. They'd done a commercial deal with NWSL where they paid a certain amount to the league, and then the other amount they were going to pay to certain players in crypto, which then players could then go and buy other cryptocurrencies with.
Right.
It was reported initially that, NWSL is serious financial trouble because of this deal. Others, sorry, Jeff Carlisle from ESPN reporting, speaking to the Players Association, says, no, nobody's going to miss a paycheck. I think what they are going to miss is commercial opportunities because that was a big sponsor slot. But, as long as they paid their first check and it cleared, you can kind of live through this. But obviously, a rocky time for cryptocurrencies in particular. Filip Kostic continues to be linked with both Juventus and West Ham. Jules, he's another one, by the way, with the agent, everywhere.
Every summer.
Now, statistically, I didn't realize this, but he's been one of the very best assist men in all of Europe. I think he's top three or top four, something crazy like that. Over the past few seasons, big part of Eintracht Frankfurt's success.
Of course.
Why will nobody pull the trigger?
It's a very interesting one. I don't know if it's his age, maybe, now that he's turning 30 soon.
He has a year left on his deal, so he's still got to work that out.
We remember the whole Lazio thing last summer. And I don't know, maybe it's the fact that he's a pure wing-back. I think a lot of managers, maybe in club, don't see him playing a left-back at all. So you already need a back three to bring him into your team. If you play with a back four, for example, he's not really any use to you.
Spurs!
Or certainly people think like that. But Perisic was on a free. Would you get Kostic and Perisic? Although Perisic can, obviously, he's both two-footed, so can play on the right-hand side as well.
I don't know.
It's interesting.
I don't think he's on his
Spurs. I would think a lot of clubs would be after Kostic, especially, again, teams that play with a back three or back five.
Yeah, I think it also helps if you've got a certain center forward with certain characteristics to play off. Very good. Very good player. I think he's going to move to one or the other at some point.
But
Juve, you're right. If they play a back four, I think that's...
It's tricky.
It's a little tough.
Yeah. You may remember that a Premier League player was arrested on suspicion of rape last month. That case has since been dropped because, and I open the quotes, the relevant legislation had not yet come into effect at the time of the alleged offence, close the quote, and the player can't be named for legal reasons. But police issued a statement saying that they were alarmed at the abuse received by the woman who accused him, Gab.
Yeah, this is a sad situation. It's an awful situation. It's also a situation where everybody knows, or a lot of people know, who the player is. And even though they aren't going forward with it, it seems to be has to do with statute of limitations issues. It means he's never going to get his day in court either. So no good comes of this. This woman coming forward does not deserve the abuse that she gets. And I would love for people who, sometimes we hear about people who get arrested for abuse they post on social and so on. This is a woman who told her side of the story. Maybe could have gone to court. If it happened more recently, it would have gone to court.
Yeah.
And we would have established some level of truth. But you can never have a situation where victims or alleged victims are intimidated into not telling their story. So, sad situation. Now, I have a soft spot for Memphis Depay. I think we both expect Barcelona will sell if they find a taker. I think he's much more of a market than our boy Aubameyang, for example.
Yeah, for sure.
Where would he fit? And would he move the needle?
So I think he's sad because He played well under the Dutch guy last season. He kept that team at times earlier in the season. Then Xavi arrived, and clearly we saw, even with the little injuries that he had and so on, that he was never really a Xavi fit. I think he wanted to stay to try to earn a place in the team, despite all the competition that they have for all those forward positions, because he can play central, right, left, whatever. And I think he realized that there was not going to be a space for him through the season, that, you know, if he stayed at Barcelona, it would potentially be a hard season with the World Cup for him in the middle. You can't take that risk.
Yeah.
So now he decided to go. It depends how much money Barcelona wants, of course, but I think he would fit a lot of teams. I think he's a real talent. I'm with you. I like Memphis a lot. I saw him at Lyon maturing, developing from maybe a bit of a spoiled kid, let's be honest, to a really, really consistent performer, can take the pressure, responsibilities, all of that. And I think it would be a really good signing for a lot of clubs.
You know, I think there's been so much focus on De Jong on and off to United and so on, and deferred wages, whatever. This is a guy who arrived on a free. So whatever money you get for him is pure profit, plus you're removing his wages. You know, we talked about Barcelona's situation before with the leavers. I'm sure they can get there by selling De Jong, but they can also get there by
getting selling. 20 million for Memphis, for example, something like that.
It is pure profit, and I think he'd be very good. And also with Lewandowski rarely gets injured.
Never.
So if you're backing up Lewandowski, it really means that you're probably not going to get on the pitch very much at all.
Yeah.
So that might suit Alba, perhaps, Alba, a little bit more. He doesn't have a World Cup.
Yeah.
Gabon not going to the World Cup.
Not this year.
So. No. Yeah, I think he's a tremendous... But I think this is one of those deals that's going to get done in the final hours of the transfer window, when we see those musical chairs happening.
Yeah. Oscar sort of disappeared off the... I can't believe this is a quick...
Yeah, we're talking about Oscar.
You love Oscar.
Dude, 70 million! You know, Oscar is still one of the most expensive players of all time.
Yes, somehow. I mean...
He played for Brazil loads of times.
Yeah,
he's won things with Chelsea.
And I know you like him a lot. And
respect!
Yeah.
Mourinho likes Oscar.
So, Oscar sort of disappeared off the radar. Everybody had forgotten about him, apart from Gab. After moving to Shanghai 5.5 years ago, and now he's back at Flamengo. You see, clearly, he liked living in China, right? And Chinese football? Otherwise, he would not have stayed so long.
Look, I'm fascinated by this, because he's still only, I think he's only 32 years old, by the way. He stayed there a very long time. I'm sure he made a ton of money at Chelsea. He made more money when he went there. I like to think he stayed in China throughout the pandemic, throughout all that stuff. I think he actually, from what I'm told, he actually liked it there.
Oh, that's good.
Every story is just a giganto money grab. I don't know how much money he has in the bank, but like I said, like, I don't even need it to stay there that long.
Yeah.
Now he gets to go back to Brazil on his way to Flamengo. Why not? Part of me does wonder, what kind of a player would he have become? If, obviously, at Chelsea, he had his moments, right?
Yeah, he had some brilliant moments.
And then he had some slightly rough times where he was in and out. If he'd moved somewhere else in Europe, you know, would there be a whole alternate Oscar history out there?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
The Arsenal All or Nothing series has been released on Amazon. Jules, what behind-the-scenes stuff stands out for you? But let me make a point first. All or Nothing is a stupid title. It might have made sense.
You don't like the franchise name.
What?
You don't like the franchise name.
It's really dumb. All or Nothing means if you don't get where you want to be, you get fired. That's what All or Nothing means, right? Pep, it's just silly. But whatever, that's just me.
Yeah.
Take it up with people at Amazon.
I was invited, kindly, on the red carpet and to the premiere. We saw the first two episodes. I know some people have seen more, and there have been a few clips released. And obviously the one about training with You Never Walk Alone, at Colney, to get ready to the atmosphere of Anfield before playing Liverpool and losing 4-0, is what has been talked a lot about.
No, for me, it's the one Arteta drawing the little cartoons and stuff. I didn't know
so
he had the skills of a cartoonist.
Yes. Clearly, he had practiced that before, because the brain especially looked pretty good, I thought. I was like, oh, wow. He looked a little bit like a cloud, maybe. But still, it did good. I like that he's got ideas. He's the big star of the show, of course. He focuses a lot on him. He's at the heart of it all. There's a lot of little funny things there and there. And what I find is always good, there's a lot of match content, which we know about it, which we can see all the time on Sky Sports or on BT Sport, whatever. The best bit is the bit within the squad, inside the canteen, inside the dock room, inside the bus, all that kind of stuff. And for that, it's great. If you're an Arsenal fan, even if you're a football fan, it's good to see how they live, how they train, what they are together. I love those things. I know you're not too keen. Mm-hmm. I love those documentaries. I watch them all, not just Arsenal or PSG, but all of them.
I prefer the Neymar one. No, I'm just kidding. It is what it is, right? These are editorially controlled by the clubs. I'm not having to go to Arsenal. It's the same with City, same with Juve when they did theirs. I'm assuming it's the same with the Sunderland one, although they ended up looking like
Amazon,
Muppets. No, I know, but take it for what it is. It's club content, it's club narrative. It can be entertaining sometimes, but there's a lot of stuff which no doubt ends up on the cutting room floor or the cameras are out.
So it doesn't mean
this is gospel just because you see it.
No, and the best bit would be to see how they treat the Aubameyang exit, the captaincy, all of that, which is in a few episodes to come, which I think would be quite fascinating to watch. Ajax have banned signs, those banners asking for players' shirts at the stadium, after the game and etc. For security, they said, are you on board with this? What do you think?
I don't. I mean, security, presumably, like a bunch of
people fighting for a shirt and stuff
whatever.
Like that.
Look. Every time I see like a four-year-old, a little cute little boy or little girl holding up the sign and it'll say something like, Marcos Alonso, give me your shirt,
please,
or whatever. I'm like, dude, like, what kind of a parent are you?
No!
This isn't sweet. This is stupid.
Why? If he's his or her hero and favorite player and having a shirt that he wore and played with is great.
Why? I don't think so. I think a lot of times, There's a parent saying, yeah, this is a good idea. Go ask him for your shirt. No, like I think, let's be old school about this. Outside, you get an autograph, you get a picture taken if you can. It's up to the players. If the players want to give you your shirts, give you your shirts. But they shouldn't just go because somebody's holding a sign. And it's that kind of thing. Not to mention the disappointment if the player walks right past the little boy. If the player walks past your four-year-old, right, who's holding up the Carney Chukwuemeka, give me your shirt, right, walks past him. Does he then think Carney Chukwuemeka wouldn't give me a shirt? He's horrible. How do you explain it?
No,
he had something else to do.
He
loves it.
Another kid.
All right, whatever. Not for me. I'm sorry. I'll take a back seat on one this one. But Jules, we're going to come back on Monday. We're going to have a lot to talk about because,
of course,
I cannot stand the wait. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.